A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He's been digging into the practical side of importing from Alibaba, and he noticed something that trips up a lot of first-timers. Alibaba defaults to DAP terms, which means you, the buyer, are responsible for customs clearance and duties. The supplier's first question after you place the order is almost always, do you have your own customs agent? If not, we can handle it. And Daniel's point is that this question is a fork in the road. Take the supplier's offer and you're functionally doing DDP, but you might be giving up transparency and control. He wants to know whether a small importer should build their own broker relationship, whether you need a freight forwarder at all or just someone who does the customs paperwork, what the typical costs look like, and whether there's a ladder approach to doing this without getting burned, and he wants to know what that actually costs.
Under DAP, the seller's responsibility ends when the goods arrive at the named destination and are ready for unloading. They don't touch customs clearance, they don't pay duties, they don't deal with your country's import regulations. It limits their liability to what they can actually control. If you're a factory in Shenzhen shipping to 30 different countries, you cannot possibly maintain expertise in 30 different customs regimes. So, DAP is the honest default. It says, I'll get the goods to your doorstep, but the border crossing is your problem.
Which makes the follow-up question kind of interesting, right? The supplier immediately offers to solve the problem they just defined as yours. It's like a mechanic saying your transmission is shot. But don't worry, I know a guy. DAP means the seller drops the goods at the destination. Say, Ashdod Port or Ben Gurion Airport. But you, the buyer, handle import clearance and pay the duties and taxes. DDP means the seller handles everything door-to-door, including customs clearance and duty payment. Alibaba defaults to DAP, which means, unless you explicitly negotiate otherwise, the legal obligation to clear customs lands on you. That one number is where the trouble starts. When the supplier handles customs, you typically get a single bundled invoice. Product cost, shipping, duties, taxes, brokerage fees, all rolled into one line.
Right, and this is the first misconception worth busting. You need a customs broker license, and you need to post a bond, which is essentially a bank guarantee or insurance policy that covers potential duty liabilities. Right, and this isn't just a theoretical concern. Say you're a small importer in Tel Aviv ordering $2,000 worth of electronic components from Shenzhen. The supplier says they'll handle customs. Final invoice comes in at $2,800. The actual duty rate on electronics into Israel varies. Some components are duty-free under certain trade agreements, others might be 8-12%. VAT is 17%.
I want to pause on the bond for a second, because I think it's the part of this that's least intuitive to someone who's never imported before. When you hear bond, you might think of a small administrative fee, like 100 shekels, and you're done. But we're talking about a financial instrument that has to be deposited or guaranteed. It's not a processing fee, it's collateral.
Think of it like a security deposit on an apartment, except the apartment is your entire import activity and the landlord is the government. And it's where the supplier's broker has a structural conflict of interest. Their loyalty is to the supplier who gives them repeat business, not to you, the one-off importer. They have zero incentive to minimize your duties. In fact, if they're getting a percentage-based fee, they might have an incentive to maximize the declared value. A good broker working for you does the opposite. They'll look at your product and say, actually, this specific component falls under a different subheading that carries a lower rate, or there's a trade preference program you can claim.
The suppliers offer to handle customs. It's a convenience, not a partnership. That's the phrase that keeps coming back to me. And Daniel's question is really about when you outgrow that convenience and need to build something more durable. When the supplier says, we can handle it, they're offering to act as your de facto customs broker by subcontracting to a local agent. Usually someone they work with regularly, often someone you'll never get the name of unless something goes wrong. It's not technically DDP in the strict Incoterm sense, because Incoterms don't actually govern the brokerage relationship. It's an informal arrangement, where the supplier handles clearance, and you pay a bundled fee.
Now, when you say yes to that offer, here's what actually happens behind the scenes. In the United States, customs brokerage is a licensed profession regulated by Customs and Border Protection. To become a licensed customs broker, you have to pass the CBP broker exam, which has a pass rate that hovers around 30-40%, pass a background check, and post a continuous customs bond. The minimum bond amount is $50,000, and for a small importer, the annual premium runs roughly $500-$1,000.
This is where I want to dig into something you just said, using the supplier's instructions for HS codes. That sounds innocuous, but it's actually the moment where the whole thing can go sideways. Israel is similar. So the supplier tells their broker, it's electronic accessories, and the broker, who may be clearing 12 shipments that day, takes that at face value and files it under whatever generic code seems close. Nobody in this chain has an incentive to get the classification exactly right for your specific product, because nobody in this chain is accountable to you.
Which brings us back to Daniel's core insight. For the vast majority of small importers, using a customs agent is the only pragmatic path. The question is, whose agent? If they have to choose between flagging a classification issue that might delay the shipment and just filing it to keep things moving, the incentive structure points in one direction. And you won't know until something triggers an audit or a hold.
If something goes wrong, a hold at customs, an incorrect classification, a duty dispute, you're not calling the broker. You're calling the supplier in Shenzhen or Yiwu, who's calling the broker, who may or may not prioritize your issue. I talked to someone who had a shipment of electronic gadgets held at Ashdod for 2 weeks because the supplier's broker had classified them under a generic TOIS, HS code, instead of the correct code for electronic devices with lithium batteries. The importer had no idea this had happened until the goods were flagged. They spent 2 weeks emailing the supplier, who kept saying, "We're checking with our agent," while storage fees accrued at the port.
For small volume importers, using the broker's blanket bond is almost always the better deal. And here's the kicker. Those storage fees are the importer's responsibility under DAP. The supplier's broker made the error, but the financial consequences land entirely on you. In the US, a straightforward customs entry, single product type, no regulatory complications, runs about $100 to $300 in broker fees.
Let's talk about what you're actually paying for this arrangement. That's the visibility problem in a nutshell. Let's put some real numbers on the cost side of this. In Israel, a typical ad hoc customs broker fee for a single clearance of standard goods runs about 150 to 400 shekels. That's roughly 40 to 110 US dollars per shipment. If I'm doing the math, using my own broker costs me maybe $200 to $400 all in per shipment, versus the supplier's bundled approach where I have no idea what I'm actually paying for brokerage. When a supplier offers to handle everything for, say, an additional $150 on a $2,000 order, what they're often doing is paying the local broker $80 and pocketing $70. You're paying a markup for the convenience of not having to think about it. This is the part I think Daniel is really getting at. The control question.
Let me give you a real scenario. A US-based importer of kitchen gadgets uses the supplier's broker for 3 shipments. Everything goes smoothly. On the 4th shipment, CBP flags the entry because the HTS code doesn't match the product description. Maybe the broker classified silicone spatulas under a general kitchenware code instead of the more specific code that carries a different rate. CBP issues a notice of action, meaning the goods are held until the classification is resolved. The importer has no direct contact with the broker. They email the supplier in Shenzhen, who is 12 hours ahead, who then emails the broker, who then responds to the supplier, who then forwards the response to the importer. Every exchange takes 24 hours.
Can we talk about the duty refund scenario specifically? Because I think that's where this goes from. Minor inconvenience to actual financial liability.
Let's say you import a shipment of LED lighting fixtures. The supplier's broker classifies them under a generic lighting category with a 12% duty rate. But you've done your homework, and you know that certain LED fixtures for commercial use qualify for a reduced rate under a specific tariff heading, maybe 6%. That's a critical point. The importer of record is legally responsible for the accuracy of the customs entry, regardless of who prepared it. If the supplier's broker makes a mistake, you're the one facing penalties, interest on underpaid duties, and potentially increased scrutiny on future shipments. Having your own broker doesn't eliminate that risk, but it means you have someone who is contractually obligated to you, not to the supplier, and who you can hold accountable directly.
We've established why the supplier's offer is more complex than it seems. Let's now look at what it actually costs you, in dollars and in control, to take that path versus building your own broker relationship. And I think the first thing to untangle is this question of freight forwarders versus customs brokers, because Daniel specifically asked about that. You don't need to post anything. This is actually the single biggest structural reason why using a licensed broker beats any attempt at DIY clearance. The bond requirement alone makes DIY impractical for small importers, even if you could somehow get licensed. The broker's bond is a form of insurance you're essentially renting for the per shipment fee.
A freight forwarder handles the physical movement, booking space on a ship or plane, coordinating pickup from the supplier, managing the journey to the destination port, and arranging final delivery. They're fundamentally different functions. I was looking at the Israel Customs Authority's website. They maintain a public list of every licensed customs broker in the country. It's searchable by name, by port, by license number. Anyone can access it. They blur because most freight forwarders offer customs brokerage as a bundled service, and for a small importer, this is often the most practical approach.
It's worth noting that the public list is not some hidden database you need a lawyer to access. It's literally on their website. You can pull it up right now. And it's more useful than you might think, because it tells you which port each broker is associated with. A broker in Eilat is not going to be much help if your goods come through Haifa. Geography matters in customs broking. The broker needs to have a physical presence, or at least a regular presence, at the port where your goods clear.
Right, and that's a nuance that's easy to miss when you're starting out. Customs clearance isn't entirely digital, and hiring your own forwarder-broker combination typically adds 5-10% to your freight costs compared to the supplier's bundled rate, but you gain complete transparency and control. You get separate line items for ocean freight, customs brokerage, duties, taxes, and final delivery. You can see exactly what each component costs and make decisions accordingly. A broker at Ashdod knows the sea freight process, which involves terminal operators, container releases, and a whole different set of timelines. In the U.S., Customs and Border Protection maintains a publicly searchable database of every licensed customs broker in the country. You can filter by port, by name, by license number.
If the supplier's offer has these hidden costs, the markup, the lost visibility, the relationship you're not building, what's the alternative? Let's talk about finding your own broker.
Both countries make this information publicly available because customs brokerage is a regulated profession and the government wants importers to use licensed practitioners. A standalone customs broker handles one thing, customs clearance. That's the real challenge. Many brokers are set up to serve large volume importers, companies doing hundreds of entries a year. They're not interested in your two shipments of bicycle parts. But there are plenty of smaller brokers and forwarders who specialize in or at least welcome small volume clients. The key is to be direct about your volume up front so you don't waste time.
What do you actually say when you call? A full service freight forwarder. Think Quaney and Nagel, DSV. Those kinds of operations, bundles, shipping, clearance, and often warehousing into one service. It's convenient, but you're paying for that bundling. If you're comfortable managing the shipping leg yourself, which, on Alibaba, usually just means accepting the supplier's shipping quote or comparing a couple of options, then a standalone broker is all you need.
Let me push back on that slightly. What does comfortable managing the shipping leg actually mean for someone who's never done it?
On Alibaba, the supplier will typically quote you a shipping price along with the product price. That quote includes the freight from their factory to your port. You can accept it, or you can get a quote from a separate freight forwarder and compare. The supplier's quote is usually competitive because they have volume relationships with shipping lines. The trade-off is that you have less control. If there's a delay, you're getting updates through the supplier, not directly from the shipping line. But for a small importer starting out, accepting the supplier's shipping quote while using your own broker for clearance is a perfectly reasonable split. Let me ask you about the ladder approach Daniel mentioned, because I think this is the most practical part of the whole conversation. He's essentially asking, can I start with the supplies broker and then transition to my own?
That's exactly the right approach for most small importers, and I'd recommend it even to people who are convinced they want their own broker eventually. Here's why. Your first one or two shipments are learning experiences.
The process for finding a broker is surprisingly straightforward. Go to the Israel Customs Authority website, find their public list of licensed customs brokers. It's under the Customs Brokers section on the English version of the site. Filter by your preferred port if you have one. Ashdod for sea freight, Ben Gurion for air, Haifa if you're bringing goods through the north. Call 3 to 5 brokers and ask 2 questions. 1, do you handle single clearances for small importers? You're not risking a delayed shipment while you figure out the broker relationship.
The worst time to vet a new broker is when you have a container sitting at the port accruing demurrage charges. Use the supplier's broker for shipment 1 and 2, but treat those shipments as research. Pay attention to the HDS code they used. Look up whether it's correct. Note the duty rate they applied. Check whether there are trade preference programs you could have claimed. Save every document. By the time you're ready for shipment 3, you should know enough to evaluate whether a broker you're interviewing actually knows your product category.
Then you do what I'd call the one shipment test. Before you fully commit, run one shipment with your new broker while still having the supplier's broker as backup. That way, if something goes wrong, if the new broker is slow to respond or misclassifies something, you haven't burned the bridge with the supplier's option.
That's smart, and it lets you do a direct comparison on cost and service. Here's a case study that illustrates the payoff. A US-based importer of bicycle parts starts with the supplier's broker for 2 shipments. Each shipment is about $12,000 in product value, and the bundled invoice comes in at around $3,500 for shipping, duties, taxes, and fees. Total landed cost per shipment, $15,500. They use those 2 shipments to learn that their products fall under HTS code 8714.99.00 bicycle parts, which is actually duty-free under certain conditions.
This is the moment to address the awkwardness factor. Some people feel weird calling a broker and saying, I only have 1 shipment, can you handle it? They think they're too small to matter. But ad hoc clearance is a standard product for customs brokers. It's like going to a bakery and buying a single loaf of bread. Yes, they also sell to restaurants that buy 50 loaves a day. But the single loaf customer is a completely normal part of their business. You're not asking for a favor. That savings compounds. If they're doing 4 shipments a year, they're saving $2,400 annually just by owning the broker relationship. That's real money for a small business.
The savings isn't just in direct costs. A good broker who knows your products will proactively flag things. They'll tell you if a trade preference program is expiring, if the duty rate on your category is changing, if there's new documentation required. The supplier's broker will never do that because you're not their client. The supplier is. And if your product category requires permits. Electronics need Communications Ministry approval in some cases. Food needs Health Ministry. Cosmetics need specific certifications. The broker will tell you what's needed. Ideally, you send them a list of products you plan to import before the shipment even arrives, and they can predetermine the HS codes and flag any permit requirements. That turns a reactive clearance into a planned one.
This is where the ladder approach Daniel mentioned really shines. Use the supplier's broker for your first 1 or 2 orders. While those orders are in transit and clearing, you're learning. You're noting what documents the supplier provides, what HS codes seem to apply to your products, what the duty rates look like. By order 3, you've got enough knowledge to hand a package of documents to your own broker and say, here's what I'm importing, here's what I think the codes are, can you verify and clear it? You've graduated from training wheels to your own bike.
Let me give you a concrete case study that illustrates how this plays out. Importer in Tel Aviv starts bringing in artisanal olive oil soap from a Turkish supplier. First order, lets the supplier handle clearance. It's honestly not that much. You need your product's HTS code, or a detailed enough description that the broker can classify it for you. Most brokers would do the classification as part of their service, especially for new clients. You need the estimated value and weight of your typical shipment. You need the country of origin, which is not necessarily the country you're buying from. If you're buying from a Chinese supplier but the goods are manufactured in Vietnam, the country of origin is Vietnam, and that affects duty rates. And you need a sample commercial invoice. Most suppliers on Alibaba can provide this easily. The importer saves roughly $60 per shipment compared to the supplier's bundled fee, and now has a direct contact who knows their product category and can flag issues before they become port holds.
The relationship compounds. The third shipment, the broker already knows the product. The fourth shipment, the broker might notice that the supplier's invoice valuation looks off and flag it before customs does. The fifth shipment, if there's a customs query, the broker calls the importer directly and resolves it in hours instead of days. That's the difference between having a broker and being assigned one.
Some suppliers will push back on this, but you're entitled to them. You're the importer of record. Having those documents from your first two shipments gives your new broker a head start on understanding your product classification. Customs authorities don't just take the invoice at face value. They have reference prices for common import categories. Step 1. For your very first shipment, it's fine to let the supplier's broker handle it. You're learning. But request copies of every customs document: the entry summary, the duty payment receipt, the broker's invoice. Step 2. After that first shipment lands, look up the HDS code they used. Check whether it's correct for your product. Look up the duty rate. See if there are alternative classifications that might be more favorable. Step 3. By the time you're placing your third order, you should have called 3 to 5 brokers from the CBP or Israel Customs Authority lists.
There's also a subtle point about the data you're capturing. When you use your own broker, you get the customs declaration after it's filed. You see the exact HS codes used, the declared value, the duty rate applied, the total duty paid. The test shipment is key. Don't cancel your supplier's broker arrangement until you've seen your new broker perform. You can spot if a particular product category is getting flagged more often. None of this is visible when the supplier handles clearance.
These are the intangibles that determine whether a broker relationship works long term. Landed cost is the total cost of getting a product from the factory to your warehouse. Product cost plus shipping, plus duties, plus brokerage, plus any incidental fees. If you don't know your landed cost, you don't know your margin. And if you don't know your margin, you're pricing blind. The customs piece isn't huge as a percentage, but it's variable, and variability is what kills margin forecasts.
You can hire a standalone customs broker and handle the freight coordination yourself. But the coordination burden is significant, and the cost savings are usually marginal. Consider it a learning tax. Use those orders to understand your HS codes, your duty rates, and what documentation your products require.
You're not paying dramatically more than you would for separate services, and you're saving yourself the headache of being the middleman between two different providers who each blame the other when something goes wrong. For importers doing more than maybe 10 shipments a year, it might be worth unbundling and optimizing each component separately. But for the small importer Daniel is describing, the bundled approach is the sweet spot.
The cost difference between the supplier's bundled solution and your own forwarder broker. We said 5 to 10% on freight, but the transparency gain is enormous. You go from one opaque number to a clear breakdown of what you're paying and why.
That transparency is the whole game. When you know your true landed cost per unit, product cost plus shipping, plus duties, plus brokerage, plus delivery, you can price your products accurately. You can evaluate whether a supplier's price increase is reasonable or whether you need to find a new source. You can negotiate with freight providers because you know what the market rate actually is.
There's a question that naturally follows from this. What happens when you scale? At what volume does it make sense to negotiate a retainer with your broker or bring in a freight forwarder who bundles services? The supplier's offer to handle customs. It's a convenience, not a partnership. Building your own broker relationship is an investment in your import business. It pays compounding returns in transparency, control, and cost savings over time. When you hit roughly 5 or more shipments a month, the math on a retainer starts to make sense. You're paying for priority service and potentially lower per-shipment fees. And when your supply chain gets complex enough that managing shipping separately becomes a headache, that's when a freight forwarder earns their fee.
I think there's an intermediate step worth flagging, even if we're not doing the full episode on it yet. Between 5 and 10 shipments a month, some brokers will offer what's essentially a hybrid arrangement, not a full retainer, but a reduced per-shipment rate in exchange for a commitment that you'll route all your clearances through them. I think the technology will definitely lower the barrier, but the regulatory framework isn't going anywhere. The bond requirement, the legal liability, the complexity of the harmonized tariff schedule, those are structural, not technological.
The broader point here is that the suppliers we can handle it offer isn't a trap. It's not a scam. It's a convenience product. And like most convenience products, you pay a premium for it. The question is whether you want to keep paying that premium indefinitely, or whether you want to use it as a bridge to something more efficient. Daniel's framing, the latter approach, is exactly right. The broker relationship remains central, even if the tools get better.
The tools make the broker more efficient, which is good for everyone. But the judgment, knowing which HTS code applies to a novel product, knowing how to respond when customs raises a question, knowing which trade programs you qualify for, that still requires expertise.
I think there's also a psychological shift that happens when you make this move. When you use the supplier's broker, you're still in the mindset of a buyer, someone who places orders and waits for things to arrive. All right, so to land this, if you're importing from Alibaba, use the supplier's broker for your first shipment or two, but treat those as research missions. By shipment 3, have your own broker lined up. Do a test run, compare the results, and then transition fully. The cost savings are real, but the control and transparency are the bigger prize.
When you call those brokers, be prepared. Know your product, know your volume, have your documents ready. The more professional you sound, the more willing they'll be to work with a small importer. Send them your broker's contact details and say, please send all shipping documents to my broker at this email address. That sets the boundary clearly. The supplier knows they're no longer responsible for clearance, and your broker knows they're the point of contact. It prevents the awkward situation where the supplier's broker and your broker both try to file a declaration for the same shipment.
The whole point of this episode is to make that choice deliberate. Customs sees two declarations for the same shipment and flags it. Now you have a delay that's nobody's fault but takes time to untangle. A single clear email prevents the whole thing.
To wrap up, here's the big question you should be asking yourself as you scale. At what point does your import volume justify moving from ad hoc brokerage to a retainer relationship, or from standalone broker to full-service freight forwarder? Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact. The supplier's offer is a training wheel. Use it, learn from it, and then take it off.
Right, because of course that's where you'd find it.
In the late Victorian period, a British expedition in Nepal documented fulgurite formations in the Annapurna Range whose glassy interiors displayed an unusual optical property when held at certain angles to the sun. The lightning-fused silica refracted light into a pale violet spectrum not typically seen in desert fulgurites, a phenomenon the expedition geologist attributed to the particular mineral composition of the high-altitude sand.
I'm Corn.
I'm Herman Poppleberry. We'll catch you next time. If you enjoyed this episode, tell someone who's ever stared at an Alibaba checkout screen wondering what to click. Find us at myweirdprompts.com. I'm Herman Poppleberry.
I'm Corn. Go find your broker.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.